9:10 is our time. Welcome to the Sports Ticket. Wade Gershner with you on this Tuesday. Let's jump right into it. Kansas State having another player that's going to enter the transfer portal. No big surprise, though, after a recent signing of a JUCO point guard. The writing was on the wall that David Sloan would be leaving the program, and the massive turnover of the K-State men's basketball team's roster continued yesterday with Sloan announcing that he was entering the transfer portal. He revealed the news in a message sent from his personal Twitter account. "I would like to thank God for giving me this platform and this ability to do what I love. This past year has been filled with many blessings, as I am grateful to have spent it with the Wildcat Nation. However, I would like to announce I will be completing my degree and final year of eligibility elsewhere. I'd like to personally thank Coach Bruce Weber for the opportunity to represent K-State and the entire Wildcat community. Thank you, Wildcat fans, the entire coaching staff, and my teammates. I wish you all the best." Sloan is the fourth Wildcat and second rising senior guard to transfer since the end of the season, joining Cartier Jada and forwards James Love III and Nigel Shad. It should be pointed out, Love and Shad didn't really play. Cartier Jada wasn't happy. We knew that was a problem. Jada transferring to Virginia Tech, although we'll see if he actually plays there or not. Sloan played in all 32 games for K-State last year, averaged 19 minutes, and played well at times. 5 points, 2 assists, and 1.5 rebounds a game. He was a highly touted junior college prospect, and so Sloan leaving, entering the transfer portal. Now, K-State is in line, perhaps, to pick up a commitment, they're hoping anyway. Sloan's transfer news broke on the same day that Donovan Williams, a 2020 guard prospect for Nebraska, named K-State one of his three finalists, along with Big 12 rivals Oklahoma State and Texas. Williams announced that he'll make his commitment coming up on April the 13th on Monday. He's a 6'5", 185-pound shooting guard. He previously pledged to Nebraska before decommitting. He's a four-star prospect, according to Rivals. And so K-State would love to pick up Donovan Williams, but they'll have to wait till Monday to see what he chooses to do. Along with the four transfers, K-State lost three seniors in McCall Mayween, Xavier Sneed, and Pearson McAtee from a team that went 11-21, setting a single-season program record for losses. So if you're a K-State fan, you're like, oh, my goodness, all these guys are leaving. Is that really a bad thing? I mean, the team went 11-21. You don't want that exact same team back next year, probably, when it struggled that much. They do have some young guys, obviously freshmen that played this past year. I think K-State will be all right, and it might be addition by subtraction in some cases. Many people believe that's the case with Cartier Jada, unfortunately, who is very athletic and talented. But David Sloan, he was a decent player for K-State last year, and they seemed to be a better team when he was on the floor, but he is going to transfer. Major League Baseball is talking about getting back to business. They have a plan, according to sources, that would dictate that all 30 baseball teams would play games at stadiums with no fans in the greater Phoenix area, including the Arizona Diamondbacks Chase Field. 10 spring training facilities and perhaps other nearby fields is where the games would be played. Players, coaching staffs, and other essential personnel would be sequestered at local hotels where they would live in relative isolation and travel only to and from the stadium. Federal officials at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as well as the National Institutes of Health, have been supportive of a plan that would adhere to strict isolation, promote social distancing, and allow Major League Baseball to become the first professional sport to return. The May return date depends on a number of concerns being allied, and some officials believe a June opening day could be more realistic. Most importantly, would be a significant increase in available coronavirus tests with a quick turnaround time, which sources familiar with the plan believe will happen by early May and allow Major League Baseball's testing to not diminish access for the general public. While health officials see Major League Baseball players as low-risk candidates for COVID-19-related issues because of their age and health, putting protocols in place to ensure the health and safety of older managers, coaches, umpires, and other personnel would be paramount to making the plan work. Could it be difficult? Absolutely. It is an enormous plan and very cumbersome, and it would take a buy-in by the players, but there is a possibility that this could happen in Major League Baseball, so stay tuned for that. The National Football League, of course, affected by COVID-19, even though their season is not underway. Training camp hasn't started, but the NFL does have a draft coming up in April 23rd through the 25th, and the NFL will hold a fully virtual draft with team personnel separately located in their homes. The commissioner, Roger Goodell, said in a memo he sent out to all 32 clubs, the league will continue on a temporary hiatus after the draft, and team facilities will remain closed indefinitely in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. Team facilities have been closed since March 26th, and the league offices have been closed since March 13th. Goodell cited the stay-at-home orders issued by the government as a reason for the facilities to remain closed, which include every NFL team's community. The league announced it will reopen facilities when it's safe to do so based on medical and public health advice and in compliance with government mandates. It was decided last month that the 2020 NFL draft would not be held in Las Vegas. The league holds off-season voluntary minicamps in May, and those are in jeopardy of not happening. Teams hold their mandatory minicamp in the middle of June, and the chances of those occurring yet to be determined. While the facilities remain closed, the league is still conducting a plan on how to proceed off-season workout activities. NFL coaches won't be allowed to communicate with players via video conferencing at the moment, as phase one of voluntary off-season workouts were delayed a week. The five teams with new head coaches were scheduled to start their off-season workout programs on Monday. So the virtual draft, how is that going to work? That's going to be interesting. Because what if you have some kind of problems with software or connectivity in regards to doing some kind of these teleconferences or going to each team individually? And where's the person going to be? The general manager going to be in the basement? I don't know how it's all going to work. It's going to be interesting, but it's going to be a virtual NFL draft coming up later on in the month of April. Speaking of working out of your basement, Andy Reid's getting ready for the draft. Yep, he climbed the summit of his profession, won the Super Bowl here recently with the Chiefs in February in his 21st season as head coach. He got the monkey off his back. But Andy Reid doesn't seem to mind his new working environment, which is literally in the cellar. It's in his basement, as he and the rest of the NFL's head coaches are forced to work from home due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Well, Reid says of his new digs during an interview with Peter King of Pro Football Talk, it's kind of classic. I'm sitting in my basement, literally. I've got an ARC trainer sitting here in case I want to jump on that to get in a little exercise. I've got my monitor set up along with my computer and my iPad right next to that. I've got one of my wife's antique tables here, a little coffee table there that I'm using to throw everything on. I'm in the basement, and you know what? It's not that bad. Oh, my goodness. Interesting stuff. So he gets to work relatively close to his usual office inside the Chiefs facility. So that's pretty close for Reid nearby. But other coaches like new Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski doesn't have that luxury. He currently has his home in Minnesota, and he'll likely have to conduct the draft with the Browns over 700 miles away, whereas Reid's not too far from the Chiefs facility. So Andy Reid getting work done preparing for the draft in his basement. You go, Andy. You go. Golf has come up with a tentative schedule. Here is their tentative schedule. The PGA Championship, previously held in May, has been rescheduled for August 6th through the 9th. The U.S. Open, previously scheduled for June, will be held September 17th through the 20th. The Ryder Cup will be September 25th through the 27th at Whistling Straits. And the Masters, normally in April, has been moved to November 12th to the 15th there at Augusta National. That is the plan as of now in regards to the majors and the Ryder Cup coming up. The British Open Championship, I do believe, has been canceled, if I remember seeing that correctly. So there'll be three majors, the PGA Championship, U.S. Open, and the Masters, and then there's the Ryder Cup as well. That's assuming everything goes as planned. This is a tentative schedule, certainly, and subject to change. All right, we are going to begin. Last week, we had a sports championship week rewind where we focus on five state championship teams and talk to their coaches. Last week, if you missed any of that, it is posted. Just go to our podcast page at our website, kdcountry94.com. Click on the Sports Ticket Podcast and go back and listen to some of our rebroadcasts of those state championship games and to hear from the coaches of those state championship teams. Yesterday, we had a look back at Beloit Trojan football and their four state football championships. We heard from former players and coaches with a program called Uncommon that we aired back in November of 2013. If you missed that, once again, it's available at our website, kdcountry94.com. Click on the podcast tab and click on the sports ticket tab, and you'll have the Sports Ticket Podcast. Coming up tomorrow, Scott Fulhig, former Beloit High School star. He'll join us to relive his K-State and NFL playing days. And Thursday, Gene Cady will replay an interview of his that we had with him back in 2013. The College Hall of Fame basketball coach will join us. His first coaching gig was at Beloit High. And Scott Fulhig, we talked to him back in 2015. We're going to replay part of that interview coming up tomorrow. Friday, we are working on trying to get a hold of Mark Simoneaux, but we have not heard back from Mark, but I don't know if we got the exact right information or not. So I left a message, so hopefully we'll hear back from Mark Simoneaux to get a Smith Center perspective of a local athlete that's gone on and done great things, of course, in college at K-State and then on into the pros, of course. So we're working on Mark Simoneaux to have him on later this week. We don't know if that's going to happen or not. We do have a backup plan. if that doesn't take place. But today, we are joined by Lindsay Eck Gray, the former St. John star. She's going to join us to look back at her fantastic track and field career. Pretty amazing stuff. 12-time state champion. That's right. I said it. 12 state gold medals. That's third all-time for high school girls. She won the long jump 4 consecutive years. One of the best hurdlers ever in the state of Kansas. She still holds the 1A state record in the 100 and 300-meter hurdles to this day. And she joined us last week, and we recorded this interview with Lindsay discussing her career. I've heard all the stories, and I'm sure some of us that maybe weren't born and raised here that are transplants that move in, you hear stories of athletes and what they've done. And sometimes you hear these stories and like, really? That seems pretty crazy. That's amazing. Did that really happen? Well, yeah. Lindsay Eck Gray, if you didn't know, if you're younger, she was an amazing track and field athlete, and Lindsay joined us to talk about her career. Welcome back to the Sports Ticket. We continue starting our series here the rest of this week, talking to some connections from the area, either coaches or former athletes that had done very well at the high school level and then took their talents to college and even in some cases all the way to the professional level. And we begin today with Lindsay Eck Gray, who was a fantastic track and field star at St. John's back 97, 98, 99, and 2000. Lindsay joins us today to talk about the good old days. Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I am great. I know you're a little bit nervous about this whole thing.
Yes.
Because what this requires is to talk about yourself and your accolades. And for young people out there that maybe didn't know you're a track and field star, but they know you at Gray Drug and Fountain, they're going to learn a little bit more about you today, right?
Yes, not the kind to toot my own horn, but here I am.
Okay, so we want you to toot your horn. We want you to toot your horn a little bit because you have a right to. It's one thing to talk the talk. It's another to walk the walk, and you did the run. And hurdle, and whatever else, which we'll get to. But Lindsay, you were in high school, 97 to 2000, that was the range, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you became one of the best hurdlers ever in the state of Kansas. We'll get to that in a moment. But what got you involved with track and field? Why that sport?
You know, it all started, it was the summer going into my sixth grade year. We had actually had time trials in PE. And when I came home that evening, I told my dad that, you know, he asked, of course, how it went. And I said, well, I won everything. And I said, he goes, so you beat the girls. And I said, yeah, I beat the boys and the girls. And he's like, really? Which my dad was really impressed. And it really isn't as impressive as it sounds because I probably had like 15 kids in my class. It wasn't like I was beating 100 boys and girls in my class. But whatever, my dad was impressed and said, well, would you like to pursue and see if we can find some track meets or do something? So he actually, at that time, there was a Beloit track club. And so he tried getting in touch with the head coach for the track club at that time and didn't have any luck. And so remembered seeing a picture of Terry Bailey and his daughter in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And didn't even really know Terry Bailey at the time, but decided to give him a call and see if, you know, coaching was something he was interested in. And Terry at that time worked at the youth center and said, you know, I'm working full time, but I'd be happy to meet you at the track. And so I think we probably had our first practice the very next day.
And it just took off from there.
Yeah.
Let's get the background on Lindsay. Let's get to the really cool stuff. 12 gold medals at state track and field. We're not talking bullet relays. We're talking state track and field. Although you did okay at the bullet relays, 16 gold medals at bullet relays, 16 gold medals Pike Trail League meet, which means that you were perfect at the bullet relays and perfect at Pike Trail League in regards to 4 events all 4 years and 16 golds. I can do the math on that. That's not bad.
Yeah. You know, but the only ones that you really remember are the ones that you lost.
but you didn't in those two situations.
I didn't lose those, but I did lose a race in junior high in the 100-meter dash. And I did lose. I got second place at KU Relays my senior year. So those are the ones that I remember.
You're like Shauna Remus, who was in here the other day.
Yes.
You're saying the same types of things. Okay, so let's go back to the 12 gold medals at state, because you end up having, we believe, 14 medals overall at state, which means you could only possibly be in 16 events, 4 per year times 4 years, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. So 14 of a possible 16 medals you could get, and you got 12 gold medals And then you also had a second and a fourth. And it all started your freshman year when you got three gold medals. So you burst onto the scene. And, of course, the hurdles, this is pretty amazing stuff, that Lindsay won four golds her senior year. We'll get to that in a moment. But she won four times the 100-meter hurdles, which means she never was beaten at state in 100-meter hurdles. And she won the 300-meter hurdles the 3 years that she ran them at state. And she still holds, Lindsay does, the 1A state record in the 100 and 300-meter hurdles. And by the way, her time in the 100-meter hurdles, 14.34 in 2000, her senior year, would also hold the 2A state record if she were in that class. And then she holds the 1A 300-meter hurdle record for time, 43.34 in 2000, her senior year. And that not only would be a Class 1A record, but her time is better than the record holders in 2A and 3A. So pretty impressive stuff. Man, I'm tired just talking about it. Weren't you tired doing all that in such a quick time?
Yes. It took a lot of hard work. You know, I did have some natural ability, but, you know, starting from the very beginning, I practiced pretty much every day all year long. Well, I guess not every day, but usually Monday through Friday, especially in the summers. And, you know, it was a lot of dedication. And, you know, I still remember, I think I was a freshman, and I remember Jackie Stiles winning, you know, her, I don't know, it was 14 gold medals, I think, that she ended up getting at state track. And I remember hearing that, and I was like, I am going to do that someday. And, you know, I set my goal on that and worked hard and ended up paying off. And I didn't quite get 14, but came close.
Yeah, so 12 golds in then 4 year senior year. And you won the long jump every year you're at the state meet as well. So we talk about how you're a great hurdler, but you also dominated the long jump. What was your favorite event of all those?
You know, honestly, long jump was probably my favorite. Mm-hmm. And I'm still mad that I missed the state record in long jump. I think I jumped the exact same distance 2 years in a row, my junior and senior year. And I was so close. You know, there were practices that I got over 19 feet, and I would have been close to that state record, but just couldn't quite get it done at state.
Okay, so let's go back to the hurdle part, because that's what a lot of people remember you for, one of the best hurdlers ever in the state of Kansas. And that would be, what got you to start doing the hurdle specifically? And then I also kind of want to know, when you were younger, if you were faster than everybody, were you always the one of those kids that was like, I'll race you, so that you could win all the time because you knew you were faster than everybody?
You know, especially locally, I did very well in the smaller meets. And I mean, I was fast, but, you know, when you're running summer track, especially, and you're qualifying for meets, you do pretty well in the first couple meets. But if you're just a sprinter, you know, you get to those meets, you know, right before nationals, and, you know, there's kids there that aren't messing around when it comes to running, and they're fast, a lot faster than me. And that's kind of what brought me onto the hurdles. You know, if you had really good speed and you had, you know, could even have decent form, you could be a really good hurdler. And that's why my coach, you know, really got me interested in the hurdles. And, you know, from the very beginning, it just worked out really well for me.
Balance and agility is pretty important, and timing, of course, when you do the hurdles. So that does kind of create an X factor for people that just have to run straight ahead for 100 yards or 200 yards. It puts an obstacle, obviously multiple obstacles in front of you with the hurdles. Did you ever have a really bad wipeout on the hurdles?
I sure did, and I will never forget it. It was actually, I had never, ever even barely brushed a hurdle in practice or track meets, and it was my sophomore year. At regionals, I took a bad fall and ended up having a concussion. It was not a good deal. We had did some adjusting with my steps that week in practice, and, you know, we figured out how I could take out one step between each hurdle, and of course that was going to result in an even faster time.
Yeah.
Well, instead it resulted in me falling and bashing my head. But the good thing that came of that whole thing, I had a concussion, but convinced my teammates and coaches and that I did not have a concussion, that I was fine, and turned around like an hour later and ran the 200-meter dash and beat the fastest girl in the state in the 200.
Wow.
She ended up beating me at state later, but I thought, gosh, maybe I should knock myself out more often.
Yeah, wow. You get a concussion, and then you're like, I'll just go beat this girl that's the state champ in the 200. Man, that's pretty
but
impressive.
It still makes me sick that I didn't get to run the 300 hurdles at state that right. year. Yeah.
But Lindsay Eck Gray, Lindsay Eck, when she was in high school and college, she is our guest today on the Sports Ticket as we are featuring athletes or coaches that have connections to North Central Kansas this week on the Sports Ticket. So hurdles, long jump, and then you throw in the triple jump, which you're able to win that at state your senior year.
Yes, and that honestly probably was, we still look back and wonder if I should have did that all 4 years, but it was an event that was so hard on the body, and you had to do it right, or, I mean, could injure yourself pretty easily. So, you know, we decided my senior year just to go for it, and it worked out, and I ended up winning that event my senior year also, so.
Just oozing with talent. Lindsay could have probably won 8 or 9 different events at state track and field, but you're limited to 4. Now, I read, and big thank you, a big shout out, by the way, to Terry Bailey, because he gave me a DVD of the presentation to induct you into the Kansas State High School Activity Association Sports Hall of Fame. More on that in a moment. But one of the things I read in one of the articles that you were quoted of saying, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that you wanted to run against anyone from any class. You were almost, it sounded like, I'm just reading between the lines, that you were kind of disappointed that you had to run at the 1A level at state because you felt like you could beat anybody regardless of classification.
Yes, and that's why I, you know, you can't beat the state track meet. I mean, there's just nothing like it. But the KU relays is right up there with it, and that was my favorite part about the KU relays is it was the best of the best. And, you know, there I had a girl that I competed with in the summers, and she was from a 6A school, and I got to run against her at the KU relays. And that's one of my most fondest memories from high school is my senior year at the KU relays. All three of us, I got beat, I got second, but all three of us broke the KU relays record.
Wow.
At that time, so
the best of the
best.
We all
actually went under 14 seconds.
And the best of the best, regardless of classification.
Yes,
which is,
and I always, not that it was ever going to happen, but I always wanted the state meet to be just like the KU relays.
Yeah, I can see why. Absolutely. So. You weren't afraid of going up against anybody, regardless of their age. Obviously, as a freshman, Lindsay won 3 gold medals at state. 2 as a sophomore. 3 as a junior. But you never had 4 at state, so you're getting greedy now.
Yeah.
And your goal going in your senior year, from what I read, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you wanted to go out with a bang and be 4 for 4 at state.
Yes, and I mean, I wanted to do that every year. And, you know, thank goodness for my coach. I mean, I said, what can that 4th event be that I can take a gold in? And he knew it was the triple jump all along. Mm-hmm. He just worried about me getting injured prior to getting there. And we went for it, and it worked out well.
4 gold medals your senior year, and then your senior year, you almost single-handedly won a state title for your school. You had a little bit of help, and you guys end up getting second, lost by a couple of points for the state title in that city, right?
Yes, we did, and, you know, that was a pretty funny story. We get up there to get my or to receive our award, and Ness City had beat us by 2 points, and they probably had a good 20-plus kids on their team. And the guy that was getting ready to hand us our trophy said, you know, I need your full team here for the awards presentation. It was myself and my teammate, Teresa Brown. And I said, well, now Griffith at the was Teresa Brown, but I said, we're here. And he's like, no, I need your entire team. And I'm like, no, we're really here. It was 2 of us.
2 of you combined to get second at state. That's pretty impressive. Your senior year. Now, we mentioned you were inducted into Kansas State High School Activity Association Sports Hall of Fame back in 2013. What did that honor mean to you? I mean, that's an exclusive company.
It is. And, you know, I'm very, very honored, and I still look through that list of the people that are in the Hall of Fame, and I still don't always believe that I belong in there. I guess somebody thought I did because I was inducted into there, but, you know, being with that caliber or being classified with that caliber of people is just a very honorable award. So
I read also in that information that Terry provided to me that your dad was quoted saying that she's just a competitor. She's a fighter. She's been that way since she was born. You barely survived. Of course, you don't remember this, but you barely survived being in this world to begin with.
Yeah. I can't remember. I think I was 3 or 4 months old. I was, I came down with viral meningitis, and I was bad enough that the nurse came in one evening and told my mom and dad, said, I don't think she's going to make it through the night. Mm. But by golly, here I am.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And have been a fighter ever since.
That's awesome. You know, one thing that is a common thread among the best of the best, whether it be at high school, college, junior high, professional ranks, whether it's coaching, whether it's a player, athlete, whether it's a job, is the greats, the greatest of the greats, as I like to say, the greatest of them all, have one common thread, and that is their competitive spirit. And there's no doubt, based on what you said so far, I wanted to win every single event, every single time.
Yes.
And you were disappointed or upset with yourself if you didn't win every single time.
I did. And my poor children, they are probably worse than I am, but I have been competitive for as long as I can remember, and it doesn't matter what I'm doing. I want to be the best at whatever I do.
So when you play checkers with the kids or Uno, are you like Michael Jordan, you get all mad about it if you don't
win? Actually, I was just playing Gunner and Speed the other night, and which is a card game, and I was beating him. And my husband looked at me like, really? Like, you can't let him win? And I'm like, he's got to learn how to lose.
Yeah.
You've got to deal with the heartache that comes along with losing. He'll win a lot, but you got to lose too.
That's true. There's a balance in there somewhere. Some of us are too much late. Kids win all the time. Maybe sometimes we beat them too many times. I don't know. You met the President of the United States and the First Lady?
I sure did.
Wow. When did this happen?
That was in second grade. My teacher nominated myself and a classmate for, it was the Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, I think it was the Service Award. that was a pretty funny story, actually. It was a story that I love to tell because I was grounded several times before I won this award because I was not coming home from school right away and was in trouble with my parents because they had no idea where I was at. Well, I was actually going and visiting the elderly at the nursing home. Mm-hmm. And my teacher found out about this and nominated us for the award. And so we got a free trip out of, or to Washington, D.C. out of the deal and got to meet President Bush's wife, Barbara Bush. Mm-hmm. The only reason we didn't get to meet him, he was on a trip overseas, mm-hmm. but yes.
So what made you at that young of age want to hang out with elderly or retirement home?
You know, ever since I can remember, I don't know if it was my mom being a nurse and, you know, working with the elderly, I have for as long as I can remember, I love elderly. Mm-hmm. I love the elderly and I love the babies.
Yeah, right.
So I don't know. There's just something about them. And mm-hmm. I mean, they're just a very special group of people. And I just want to be part of their lives.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool story. Lindsay Eck Gray is with us, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. A couple other headlines that Terry sent me for the Hall of Fame presentation I thought was interesting. As an eighth grader, you beat the state champion in the hurdles at a meet at Cheney. As
yes.
an eighth grader, you beat the state champion.
Yeah, so my dad and my husband and my coach will tell you that I'm actually a five-time state champion in the 100-meter hurdles, which to me at the time didn't seem like that big of a deal. It was just another mm-hmm. race, and mm-hmm. I won. But now that I look back, it was pretty cool.
You went on, you did AAU meets, and national indoor meets. One of the other things I found here, 14 years old, you beat 17, 18, 19-year-olds. You set a new record in a 55-meter hurdles by almost a full second. You won three medals at the age of 14. I would say, boy, wasn't that intimidating? But obviously it wasn't if you're able to be that successful. But was that one of those mentalities where you're like, hey, I'm 14, I got nothing to lose. I just want to see how I stack up?
You know, I don't think I really thought about it when I was running. I mean, when I went to a meet, it was all business. And if I was going to put this work in, I was going to do everything I could to win. And it didn't matter how old that person was that was standing next to me, you know, mm-hmm. I was going to beat him. And I guess I just never really let, you know, the 18-year-olds get in my head.
When you did these national meets, you obviously traveled, and I saw a picture of you and Dan O'Brien, which
yes.
I remember that whole big buzz. It was a big media campaign, Dan and Dave.
Yes.
And then, if I remember right, Dan didn't make it. Decathlon?
He was a multi-eventer.
And so they just assumed they both were going to make it that one year in the Olympics, and then Dan didn't make it, and it's like, wow, that kind of backfired a little bit. But then he came back and did fine, I think, the next Olympics. But that had to be a thrill for you to hang out with a few of the great track and field people that were older, maybe even people you looked up to.
Yeah, and, you know, that was actually a trip we made after a high school basketball game. I think it was my senior year, I got invited to run in the Simplot Games. It's the biggest high school track meet in the United States. And, you know, my dad and Terry said, you know, you got invited to this. You want to go? And it was middle of basketball season. But they said, well, you know, Dan O'Brien's going to be there. And you can meet him and get his autograph. And I was like, okay, I think I can handle that. So yeah. Off we went in a blizzard during the Simplot game, or headed to the Simplot games.
And how'd that go for you when you were up there?
You know, it went well, and it actually ended up being my first ESPN debut. My debut was only for about 2 seconds, because I can't remember. I think I got sixth or seventh, maybe. So, you know, I was on camera for a short time, but they slowly zoomed in on the winner, and out I went.
I see. You didn't just do track and field. You mentioned basketball. What other sports did you play in junior high and high school?
I did anything and everything I could. I did volleyball and basketball, and played some AAU basketball also in the summer. Mm-hmm. So,
but you obviously knew track and field was your cup of tea. So when you tried to, I'm not saying you specialized, because you didn't. You played other sports, obviously, but you were really special in track and field, clearly. But that requires dedication. It requires some sacrifice. What were some things that you, at that age, in junior high and all the way through high school, were some things that you kind of had to sacrifice in order to chase greatness?
Well, you know, a lot of friend time. I mean, kids were going to the pool and, you know, doing what kids do in the summer, and I was at the track. Mm-hmm. And I still remember even vacations that I got invited on, or got invited to go along on, and I couldn't go because I either had a track meet or I had practice that I couldn't miss. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of sacrifice, but it ended up paying off in the end.
Was there a time during all that where you go, man, you know, I really enjoy what I'm doing, but at the same time, I kind of want a little bit of a break? Did you go, I'm missing out on stuff?
You know, and I always had people asking me, you know, aren't you burnt out? Like, mm-hmm. you do this all day, every day. And I'm sure at points I thought maybe I was a little burnt out, you know, missing out on some of those things that I wanted to be a part of. But I really, truly loved what I did. And, you know, that meant more to me, my success that I had in that, than the other things that I was missing out on. So
you participated in a heptathlon, is that right?
Yes, it would. Yep, heptathlon.
Okay, so what's the difference between a heptathlon and a decathlon?
So heptathlon is 7 events, instead and the 10. Decathlon is 10.
Okay.
And so the women would always do the heptathlon, and the men did the decathlon.
Well, how'd that go, and did you like it?
You know, I tried so many different events, and, you know, starting in junior high through high school, and there were several events that I did very well in, and so that's when my coach, Terry Bailey, came up with the idea. He's like, you know, what about trying the multi-events? You know, just taking a shot at it. And so I tried that. I think it was the summer after my junior year, and I ended up going to nationals and got second that year, and received a good enough score that I was invited to train at the Olympic Training Center at an elite training camp for a week in Chula Vista, California. So that ended up going pretty well too, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely not my favorite thing though, but
yeah,
it worked out well. And you know, multi-eventers are just on another whole level. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you have to be great, and it's so hard on your body. I mean, I am not as tough as a multi-eventer, and my body can't handle.
Right.
You know, at the level that I was in high school, it was fine, but once I got into college, you know, that's what I was really recruited to the University of Tennessee for, was multi-events. And, you know, it was not a good experience. Mm. I was hurt pretty much from the second week of practice. Mm. I mean, it was you know, working on 3 events a day, and, you know, practices that were 5 or 6 hours a day.
Yeah.
And, it caused a lot of injury that I had never dealt with in the past. So
let's make that transition then to your college career. So after you win 4 gold medals, you won 12 gold medals, 14 medals overall at state track and field championships your freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year, obviously there were some schools that were interested in your abilities. Give us a list or an idea of who was vying for your services. And then
let me look at my list here.
Why did you choose Tennessee? I mean, you got KU, K-State, Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, Penn State.
Yeah.
Lindsay's a KU fan, so I can do that. Penn State, Florida State, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, Notre Dame, Georgia Tech. There are many others that you have listed here. But why Tennessee at that time?
You know, I look back and I try to remember that, but it came down between Nebraska and Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And I loved Nebraska at the time. I had Shane Levy was a friend of mine who high jumped for Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And I had went up there a couple different times for him to actually help me with high jump for the multi-events. And, you know, I had met the coaches, I met the teammates, their facilities were unbelievable. I fell in love with Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Absolutely killed my dad, who was a diehard K-State fan, but I loved Nebraska. But then, you know, the University of Tennessee called and said, you want to come out for a visit? I mean, Knoxville was beautiful. Mm-hmm. Their campus was unbelievable. And, you know, during that time, everybody knew about the University of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. I mean, mainly because of their football team and their women's basketball team. Yeah. But, you know, when it came down to it, you know, I think Nebraska ended up offering me like 80%. And Tennessee said, we'll pay for everything. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, there you go.
And mom and dad are like, all right,
yes,
that'll work.
See you later.
That'll be great. That'll be awesome. Lindsay Ed Gray is our guest today on the Sports Ticket. Terrific track and field star in high school and into college as well. So Tennessee, you go there, and then you had the injuries, as you talked about, shin splints you mentioned here in a note. Obviously, that was something new for you to deal with, it sounds like, for the most part, which, of course, is adversity. And you and I were just talking before we went on the air about the adversity. Of course, your son, part of the basketball team that didn't get to fulfill the last few games of the season. And that is part of adversity we go through in life. Life isn't always fair. And there's certainly athletes that end up being great in high school for a year or two, and then they have injuries. You didn't have that problem. But once you got to College of Tennessee, you had to deal with that adversity.
Yeah, and that was something I never had to deal with. I mean, I rarely had injuries in junior high and high school, and that was a very frustrating year. I mean, I was pretty much hurt from, you know, the second week of practice on, and I still am so sad that I never competed at Tennessee, you know, where I was 100%. And I wish I could do that all over again, but, and, you know, and just tell them that I wanted to focus in the 100-meter hurdles and the long jump. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
but it's just the way it went.
But,
you know, and there were other things, too. It was just a frustrating year. I mean, not being able to compete at 100%, and, you know, the women's team was struggling. And, you know, at Tennessee, I honestly didn't know this when they recruited me, but the men's and women's track teams were totally separate programs. They had their own coaches. We traveled separately, so wasn't always really crazy about that. My multi-event coach was awesome and got along very well with him. But, you know, the women's team was struggling, and we had our head coach was dealing with some personal issues that later cost her job, but, you know, just wasn't quite the experience that I was hoping for and looking for. So,
some noteworthy names that you happen to either meet or see or whatever. Of course, Pat Summitt, legendary women's basketball coach. Philip Fulmer won a national championship Tennessee in football. Well, that would have been 2000, right? About before you went or when you went.
Yep.
And then Jason Witten, who, of course, he had a bad 1 year on Monday Night Football being a broadcaster, but an outstanding, probably going to be a Hall of Fame tight end who played his career with the Cowboys, and now I think he joined the Raiders, if I remember correctly, for another year. But you didn't, and this is before some of these folks were a big deal.
Yeah, and that was one advantage to being hurt. I spent a lot of time in the training room.
So,
and
other people were in there
and getting attended to. And it was nothing for Pat Summitt to be laying on the table next to me getting a treatment. Mm-hmm. And she was interested in why I was at the University of Tennessee, and we had lots of really good conversations. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it didn't seem like a big deal to me.
Yeah,
but
right.
Now that I look back and what she achieved, and I'm like, wow, I actually had a conversation with that lady.
Yeah.
And then, and also, you know, at that time, Justin Gatlin was a teammate of mine.
Right.
We were in the same class and a good friend of mine. And he's, last I knew, he's still the fastest man in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that time, you know, was just a great friend and a good guy, and that was not a big deal that I was friends with. And now I'm like, wow.
Can you do stop for a second? Can you stop for a second and go, okay, Justin Gatlin, oh my God, he's still doing that stuff.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
In 2020.
I know. Those people, I mean, wow, my hat goes off to them because, and I have a friend right now that I'm still friends with on Facebook. She was an awesome distance runner at the University of Tennessee, and she is still running and trying to qualify for the Olympics.
Wow.
So those people, wow.
Yeah, that's dedication, that's for
that
sure.
That is dedication.
Okay, so then you end up going to Wichita State. Why Wichita State? And then, and I'm guessing it went a lot better.
You know, I would have never in a million years went to Wichita State out of High school. And when I got that phone call from Terry Van Lanningham, the spring semester that I came home, not really knowing what I was going to do next, he called and said, you know, would you like to come visit Wichita State? Just come see what we have, you know, see if you're interested at all. And I decided to go, and it was probably the best decision I've ever made. I loved every minute of being at Wichita State, and they made me great. So I was very glad that I took him up on that visit.
Yeah, you never know. When one door closes, another one might open.
Yes.
And that sounds like that's what you did. Now, Wichita State, talk about your experience there, part of the Women's First Conference Championship. Won a couple more there when you were there. And if you didn't win, you're usually in the top three. The program really turned into something pretty special, and you were able to be a part of that.
Yeah, and that is kudos to my coach, Steve Rainbolt. He has turned that program into something very special. And what he can do with somebody, I mean, Tyler Simmons is one, for example. Mm. You know, he was a good athlete in high school. Mm-hmm. But that kid ended up doing very well when he got to Wichita State. I mean, he ended up being a sprinter and running in sprinting races and, I mean, winning sprint races. And, I mean, that would never have been an option in high school. Yeah. So he turns people that are pretty decent into something great. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it's nothing for him to still be producing Olympians. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have people from Wichita State all the time that are in the Olympics. And so he's something very special.
At Wichita State, Lindsay was a three-time conference champion in the 60-100-meter hurdles and long jump, broke records in the 60-100-meter hurdles. Although since then, those records have been broken. Records are meant to be broken, as we know. except for the two she holds in the State at High School Activity Association history, as we explained earlier. And then you were qualified for nationals your senior year.
Yes. You know, and just to back up a little bit, you talking, I still give my coach a hard time because, you know, I was at the top of the all-time list in the hurdles at Wichita State for a while. And my coach, I like to give him a hard time because he continues to bring in these studs that are just pushing me further and further down the all-time list, and I might not even be on it anymore.
I actually pulled it up online, according to what I found, when you were a senior at Wichita State in 2005.
Oh, gosh, I'm probably a ways down there now.
You set the shocker 110-meter hurdle record, according to what I found, and that was in 2005. That record stood for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And then it was
Did it really?
In 2015.
See, according I learned to the, something
according,
today, too.
According to the numbers that I got doing a little Google search, that's what I found. Now, whether it's perfectly accurate, I've just got to go with what I found, which still means one of your records stood for almost 10 years. But
yep.
Some people don't like their records being broken. Some people think it's awesome that the records are broken.
No, yeah.
How about
I
you?
Say records are meant to be broken.
Yeah.
I've told my kids that from the very beginning. You know, when I went, you know, when Hudson was doing track last spring, we were at the Smith Center track meet, and my record is still being announced there. And I mean, most people would maybe be excited, but I'm like, come on,
somebody
break this record, please. And
yeah.
Talk about making you feel old. You're sitting there watching your son compete at the age that you broke that record.
Yes.
That'll make your person feel pretty old pretty quick.
Yeah, but at least you remember for good things, not.
Yes.
Oh, there's that Lindsay. She's in detention every other Wednesday. You know, that wouldn't be so cool.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so looking back on your career, I mean, does it seem like it was yesterday or does it seem like it was a long time ago?
No, it seems like it was a long time ago. You know, I've learned this whole, you know, when you called me last week, I've learned that my long-term memory really, really is lacking because I had to phone a friend, whether it be my coach or my dad or my husband, and say, okay, what did I do here? You know, what place did I get and what was my time and what was my jump? So, yeah, it was a long time ago.
It was 1997 through 2000. That's
yes.
when it was. So what advice would you give to a person that is an aspiring track and field athlete or really any athlete in general, but in particular a track and field person, somebody that maybe is in your shoes where you were when you were younger, and times have changed. There's more distractions now than there used to be. But what advice would you give to somebody that maybe is aspiring to maybe someday make it to the Olympics or maybe someday win a state track and field championship or run track and field, jump in college?
Yeah. You know, hard work, and I beat this into my kids' head, but hard work pays off. And, you know, a small town girl that's 5'4" and 100 pounds, you know, you set your mind to something and you work hard, you know, you can achieve some pretty incredible things. And, you know, my hard work paid for my entire college tuition. I have no debt from college. And, you know, and never settle. I mean, you can be so much better than you ever dreamed you could be. Mm-hmm. So,
and with anybody that had a great either upbringing or something went really well for them, and obviously track and field went great for you, you've got really good influences. You had some great coaches. I know Terry did so many great things for you.
I cannot say enough about the coaches, especially, you know, I had great coaches from the very beginning, and, you know, Terry Bailey, he went above and beyond, and I can never thank him enough for everything he did for me. You know, I mean, for him to be a level 3 coach, I mean, my dad struck gold when he called Terry Bailey. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's one of the 2 level 3 coaches in the state of Kansas. And, you know, and never had to pay him anything, never expected anything in return, just enjoyed everything as much as I did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and same to my college coaches. I mean, they knew I had a life outside of track, but they took me to another level. And I wish there was some way that I could, you know, pay them back for everything that they did for me. And then my parents. Yes. I mean, you know, I was from a big family. We fostered kids, you know, for several years, and we didn't always have a lot of extra money laying around. And my parents did what they had to do to get me to where I needed to get to. And I mean, they're rock stars. They all are in my book.
Do you think that helped form some of your competitive spirit in regards to, you know, being a bigger family? And I'm sure people challenge one another as you grow up. My sister and I was just one of two.
Yeah.
And we were competitive against each other.
Oh, yeah. And we definitely got that from my father. I mean, he is probably still just as competitive as I am. And, you know, my siblings were the same way. I mean, and maybe it was always us, you know, wanting to make sure that we were better than the next one that was coming.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So.
Absolutely.
But.
Well, and then, of course, track and field gave you your ultimate prize, and that was your husband.
Yes. Yes. And
Pat's like, really? We've gone this long before
my name's
brought
up? And you have not talked about me.
Seriously?
And actually, he is probably like, please don't talk about me.
No, that could be.
But, yeah, funny story. So he, at my very first track meet ever, in the very beginning, it was at Junction City, Kansas. He was from my hometown too, but still had no idea who this guy was. And he came up and offered to hold my starting blocks.
Now, how old are you?
I would have actually been a sixth grader, or summer after my sixth grade. So
wow.
It would have been my daughter Dakota's age.
Okay. Well, interesting.
Yes. So yeah. Yes, very thankful for track bringing me him.
So he held the blocks for you.
Yes. Held the blocks for me.
And then what? You just like, hey, I'll call you later. Thanks so much for holding my blocks.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure he called me the next day, and I think he called me several times a day, every day, from then on. And I still remember my dad saying, if that Pat Gray calls one more time. But I'm sure glad he called one more time.
It's all worked out very, very well. Of course, now Lindsay, her husband Pat, they have their own business that they run in Beloit. And I know your kids are involved with that. And, of course, your kids are involved in sports. Of course, I've had the pleasure of covering Hudson during his whole high school career. He's been an outstanding athlete and leader on the team and quarterback on the football team and a big part of the basketball team this year that made it to the state semifinals. And then you've got 2 other whippersnappers just chomping the bit, and I think they're going to be pretty athletic too.
You know, I enjoyed every single bit of my participating in athletics and my success that I had through track, but there is no greater joy than watching your own kids compete.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, nothing makes me happier and more proud. And I have never, ever been nervous until my kids started competing. You know, I could go run in front of thousands of people at the state track meet and it would never bother me. And I still remember Hudson's first Buccaneer football game. I was sitting next to my sister and I said, you know, I think I'm coming down with the flu. I think I'm going to get sick. And she looked at me and she goes, you know, I think you're nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, so that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
So, but no, my goal is to make my kids way better than I ever was. Mm. And they're working on it.
Yeah.
You know, They're great. They are the best part of me and the best thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, so. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Yep. Well, you obviously didn't mind pressure. I think that's another thing that's common with those that are really good at their craft or whatever they do is they're not afraid to take the big shot in a basketball game. They're not afraid to throw the pass in a football game. They're not afraid to run the ball. They're not afraid to be there and ready to anchor the 4x1 or whatever it may be. Yes. And it certainly sounds like in your situation, you were so focused on the task at hand that really wasn't time to freak out or worry about pressure.
No, I was never one to worry about pressure. However, with my children competing and them picking these high-pressured positions like quarterback and pitchers, I'm like, really? Why are you doing this to your mother? I've developed ulcers over it. So I handled pressure well when it was myself doing it, but I don't handle my kids being under pressure, but thank God they do.
Do you give a lot of advice, a little bit of advice, or you stay out of it when it comes to track and field when your kids do events with track?
I just always tell them, you know, my daughter, I am praying. I'm praying that I convince her to do track because she did a little school track meet last year and did very well in it and is already breaking records. Mm-hmm. But she loves pitching and she loves softball. So, you know, I have always told them I want as long as wherever they, you know, whether it's on the basketball court or it's on the track, as long as they love what they're doing and they, you know, they finish whatever they've done, you know, working as hard as they can and the best that they could have been, you know, then I'm happy to.
So. It should be noted here that Lindsay played basketball and Lindsay helped hold Shauna Remus to 63 points.
Gosh. Yeah. I was the little freshman that had to guard her. Mm-hmm. And obviously there was not a lot of guarding going on.
No, apparently not.
Pretty sure we had our entire team on her and there was no stopping her.
She still scored 63.
But hey, Shauna, we still won
that
game.
That's right. You got the last laugh and that still bothers her to this day, as we found out a few weeks ago, yep. No doubt. Well, Lindsay at Gray, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. It's fun to catch up with you. I've learned new things about your background in regards to how great of an athlete. I've heard all the stories and everything, but obviously not being here when that all happened, for Terry to send me that information and then to study up on this for the interview, I've learned a lot more about you and your family and how great you were. I'd heard the stories, but it is really cool that we have somebody in our midst here from North Central Kansas who's also stuck around and is still here in North Central Kansas. Raising their family and kids and all of that and shows that you can be successful whether you're from a small town, big town, little town, rural community, whatever it may be, that if you put in the work and you put in the sacrifice and you put your mind to it and have the right people around you, that you can be very successful.
Yeah. Well, big, big thank you to you. And no, I mean, what you continue to do for everybody in our community. Thanks to you, I have, you know, DVDs and I have, you know, USB drives that I'm going to be able to listen to, you know, forever and ever, you know, with all of my kids' activities. And I'm just, you know, you do an awesome job at what you do. So
well, thank you very much.
Thank you for
that.
Everything.
Thank you very much. Well, you're awesome as a track and field athlete. You're also a great person as well. And I know your mom and dad would probably say that's probably more important to them than anything you did in track and field is that you've turned out to be a great person.
Well, so. I'm a product of my own environment.
There you go. That is a great thing. Lindsay at Gray, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. We'll have this posted later on, and you can go back and listen to it in case you miss it at our podcast page at kdcountry94.com.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.